Welcome to the Reformist Pipeline, your dose of empowerment and the pipeline to inform your decisions on how you can support change in our education system. If you don't know already, this is Lindsay, affectionately known as Miss Black.
And I'm Hadi Had, Mr. Broussard. If you're feeling like you're ready for a vacation, Linz, I know you wasn't expecting that one.
Jahai, you just went on a vacation.
That was not a vacation. I'm glad that you brought it up. Norfolk was not a vacation. It was the complete opposite of a vacation in every aspect of the word.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
But would still highly recommend for everybody to go, though. I will say that much.
Would highly recommend going to Norfolk?
I think I'm glad that you said it, because I think that it was very Black, and I appreciated that. And I got to actually go to Tony Brothers' restaurant. Tony Brothers is a retired NBA referee. And his restaurant was just, I got to meet him, he just was like so cool, calm, and collected. And you know, I'm just all about Blackness. And so to see him doing his thing out in Norfolk, and as well as I also got to go to Norfolk State University, I got to see what Hampton looked like from afar. I didn't go on their campus. But Norfolk was, it was the Norfolk State University, that campus was beautiful. And I just was like, wow, this is really dope to see. I'm another HBCU, just, you know, being from California, you don't really get to see that many HBCUs. So, but enough of what's going on with you, Linz.
Well, I'm glad you're saying Norfolk instead of Norfolk. Glad something stuck with you. Wanted to say that.
Who would ever say that? Say something like that.
I just had a very enjoyable weekend in Chicago. I was celebrating a friend's birthday. And I was just like, oh, I get why y'all live here. Like, this is my third time in Chicago. And I'm like, oh, this makes sense as to why you guys withstand the cold to be here. Because very culture, lots of good food. That's how you get me. So I had a really good time in Chicago. And I know that when you're listening to this, it's going to be like the last day of Black History Month. So happy Black History Month. I would be curious to know, like, how our followers, our advocates, celebrated Black History Month this month. I feel like we are Black History, right?
Yes, we are.
And I think that we always take, when we talk about Black History, we're talking about it from an education standpoint. But I did like honoring like the present through our Abbott Elementary recaps, because that's a predominantly Black school, okay? And if you don't know what we're talking about, every Tuesday, we recap the Abbott Elementary episode from the week prior. So if you're behind, like, oh, I'm behind one episode, you're not really behind with us because we're talking about the most recent episode. We really get into it. I know our first one was about 7 different episodes, so we were all over the place, but our most recent one that we had was about the work family episode, and that one really hit home for me. I'm not gonna say too much about my feelings about the episode, simply because you can go to at the Reformers Pipeline on Instagram. You can actually rewatch the live because they're all up there, but they're really good. So if you haven't tapped in and engaged with us, please do, and tell a friend that you know talks about the show, because it's funny and y'all be watching.
Talk about it. And I realized that I said I'm ready for a vacation. I didn't realize that. I also realized why I'm ready for vacations, because I will be leaving on Friday and actually making it out of the country. I have to publicly apologize to my best friend, ride or die, Lindsay Simone Black, because I missed her birthday, and it was so, so upsetting because I got sick. Thank God it wasn't coronavirus. Sick. But I was down so bad. I have never felt like that in my life.
It's really terrible, especially honestly, getting sick now, when I hear about people getting sick, is more annoying now when it's not COVID.
It is. And I think the worst part about it is that I was scared. I was so scared that A, it was gonna get worse, but B, that like Mexico got this policy to where like you can get into the country, but the United States is like, you ain't bringing that shit back here, okay?
You're not bringing it, no.
So all that to say, I'm excited to be leaving and getting away, because I just need a break. And I have been breaking out, and I'm not sure why I've been breaking out, but I'm just gonna chalk it up to the fact of like the lack of sunlight, the lack of me, or actually the fact that I probably had just been significantly stressed at work and among so many other things. But here we are, I'm excited for this weekend. And more importantly, I am excited to see what dope people got going on after Black History Month is over. That does not mean that Black, like Lindsay and I were talking about this whole Black Future Month conversation, but Black presence evolvement is always going to be a thing. Mm-hmm, and so we need to continue just to celebrate our Blackness in every facet of the word. So check out our episode, y'all.
And we are moving and grooving into our next segment called, well, you know, I think this is going to be your favorite segment this season because it's definitely going to be mine. And it's called Terminology Time. This is where we explain a term or a phrase that is commonly used within the education field. And the reason we're doing this relates directly to our mission, which is to connect educators and non-educators so we can fight together against the injustices that are present within the education system. And we believe that in order for us to be on a united front, we do have to have a common language. So our phrase today is called Common Core State Standards. Is that ringing a bell for anybody? Should ring a bell for some of our educators. Should ring a bell for some of our non-educators? If not, that's fine. For the non-educators, have you heard of new math? Okay, that directly relates to Common Core State Standards. But before we even get to the Common Core State Standards, do y'all remember the Bush administration in the early 2000s? Oh, great. I see everybody raising their hand. The No Child Left Behind Act was enacted within that administration, and it essentially stated that all students need to be tested, have standardized testing, third through eighth grade, and once in high school across every state, and our testing needed to be normed. And it was also related to arbitrary ass results that Bush wanted to push for his education reform. Now, standardized testing has a lot of negative attributes, which is why the No Child Left Behind Act was actually edited in 2020. We're not going to get too deep into that. But what we did learn by making sure that everybody across the nation was tested in a standard way. So if you in Atlanta, you get the same test as people in California. What we learned is that education was unequal, was not equal. Excuse me, unequal is not a word, unequal. And we learned that children in Atlanta were getting a different education than children in Minnesota. And therefore, we did not have a level playing field when it comes to getting into colleges and jobs. One of the outcomes of the No Child Left Behind Act many years later, about a decade or so later, was the Common Core State Standards. Now, if you go to the page, the Common Core State Standards page on the, on Beyonce's internet, I'm going to read to you exactly what is stated to describe Common Core State Standards. Common Core is a set of high quality academic standards in mathematics and English language arts literacy. These learning goals outline what a student should know and be able to do at the end of each grade. The standards were created to ensure that all students graduate from high school with the skills and knowledge necessary to succeed in college, career, and life, regardless of where they live. Right now, everyone has not fully adopted the Common Core State Standards. There's 41 states and DC and four territories that have adopted them, like in their fullest capacity. Some states have taken some parts and some states, Texas, have decided that they're not doing nothing with that. They said it's nothing about nothing to them. So the Common Core State Standards was an effort to really level the playing field for students across the nation. Now, anything the governor enacts has some type of negative backlash. So there is some backlash. There's some negative opinions about the Common Core State Standards. And you are going to learn more about what it looks like. What do those standards look like and the change look like within math? What is this new math? Essentially, the new math really just pushes kids to understand math conceptually and not just procedurally. And if you're wondering about what that might look like, I want to make sure that you have gone to the Reformist Pipeline on Instagram and you're making sure you're following that page, because this month, our focus is going to be on explaining Common Core State Standards and the new math on our page every Tuesday. So please make sure you're following, and thanks for listening to Terminology Time.
Now it's time for We Love the Kids. This week, we're highlighting a legal battle here in our nation's capital.
a legal battle in our We Love the Kids section? Yep, we're talking about it because the Reformist Pipeline believes that education is for all. So we're happy to hear about accountability in this week's update. A District of Columbia federal judge has recently ruled that DC schools were in fact in contempt of court for failing to provide full-scale special education courses for students with disabilities at a DC jail. Federal Judge Carl J. Nichols issued an injunction in June, which required DC leaders to pull together teacher-led group classes and one-on-one sessions delivered virtually or in person at the facility. With this ruling, DCPS has until March 15th to meet yet another deadline to provide these students with an education that is their right. Juvenile detention education is a topic that oftentimes falls underneath the radar, but we're highlighting this to let folks know that it is important in yet another space where students aren't given access to their appropriate learning environments. DCPS is now responsible for submitting individualized learning plans for each of those 40 students to make up for the classes which were missed from September 2021 to January 2022. The Reformist Pipeline stands with these students and believes that education is for all and accountability is important. Without accountability of district leaders, our school's resources will not be allocated properly. And that's why we love the kids.
We are back with the concept development, y'all. And you know, I know you know at this point, that this is where we get into the big topic. And honestly, our theme of the whole season is resignation and teachers choosing themselves. And we said at the end of our last episode that we would get into Hadi's personal story and how he got into education and the exit of education. So this is going to be juicy. You might want to pause right now, grab your tea, because we're going to be sipping it. If you're a wine girl or a wine guy or wine them and they, go ahead, grab it. Yes, because it's about to be a story. And this is going to be part one. We hate to have you wait 2 weeks, but there's a lot to process here. So, Hadi, give it to us.
Yes.
Exciting. Scary, but exciting.
Yes. I'm back at it again. Talking about my story, my truth. How did I get to where I'm at today? So I'm going to take y'all all the way back to 2012. Wow, that was so long ago, because it actually was.
Hey, high school.
A decade ago. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was.
So first and foremost, like, why was the, like, how did I get to DC? Why did I attend American University? What did I study? What did I graduate with? All those questions is kind of important for us to get to the journey of me becoming an educator and all that good stuff. So I went to American University. When I got to American University, I knew two things. I wanted to pursue law school, and I also wanted to be a teacher. How that was going to happen, I do not know.
Right.
But those were two of the goals that I've had. And I knew, I remember one of the episodes I actually told y'all that at one point in time, I wanted to be a doctor, a lawyer, and a teacher.
Yes,
I but yeah, we went ahead and threw the doctor out because after the sciences weren't sciencing for me, kindly and humbly bow out.
Double homicide.
But that part. But I eventually would go on to declare a major in law and society and secondary education. So it was a double major with a certificate in advanced leadership studies. So
that's a lot.
It is a mouthful.
Just like, wait.
It is a mouthful. And they actually ended up changing law and society to legal studies. And I wish that my degree would just say legal studies because it's not as much of a mouthful. It just sounds better to
right.
me aesthetically. Mm-hmm. But here we are. So, however, eventually I would graduate with the law and society major, a minor in education, and a certificate in advanced leadership studies. Why the switch, you may ask?
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, so basically, any education major will have their typical required courses that they have to take. And then their senior year, they typically would have to do a practicum, a student teaching course. For those of you that don't know what that is, I am here to tell you. So these are two separate courses. Both involve you taking a class that kind of pushes you to use all that pedagogy you learned while in school and applying it to you being a student teacher, as well as you being kind of a fly on the wall in a classroom and observing a classroom weekly. And so the expectation was during my senior year at American, I was supposed to do both of those one during the fall and one during the spring. And your student teaching is probably, typically it's something that you commit to. It's like you basically have a job that you're not getting paid for.
Yes.
Linz is very aware of this, but she definitely had to do it. And then for practicum, what you would do is, how AU did it, in which I actually really, I got to do a taste of it. But what you would do is you would go to a school and observe a teacher teaching, and you would switch school placements on a weekly basis. So, for instance, I got to go to a school in Virginia and see, it was a public school in Virginia, got to see how that was kind of working out. Got to go to a school, I got to go to the Lab School, which is a school for special education students, that is not a traditional school in the sense that you have a listing of standards that students have to meet, so on and so forth. It's very specialized. And so students were engaged in play a lot more. Students were engaged in other academic content, but the rigor is still there, but they use different modalities to truly meet students where they are. So that was like one of the best parts of like seeing all of those different kind of school places, was just trying to be in a space in which you were, hey, just be kind of being like a sponge and soaking it all in. But be more importantly, trying to figure out like what school placement do I want to eventually work in. But given that I did not get that secondary education major, and that was a minor, I only got to do that like taste. I got to do that sampler kind of appetizer course where I got to still go to a couple of campuses, but it wasn't the real practicum experience that you typically would get. And so with these two separate courses, although I did not do them, I was also in the certificate program that I told you all about, which is the Advanced Leadership Studies. And my required courses for that certificate conflicted with the student teaching and practicum experiences. So I realized this at the end of my sophomore year. And so I started to research ways to pivot so that I still could pursue education. Because like I said, I knew I wanted to be a teacher in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, you were really trying to make it work.
I really was.
Look at you now, loser.
That part. Running in the opposite direction. So I'd eventually find this organization called Teach for America. Okay? Ooh. Yes, that part. So I applied to be a Teach for America campus campaign coordinator first. And basically the CCC is what our acronym was responsible for recruiting students to join the core, which is the group of folks who apply to Teach for America and get in, to join the core, which basically meant that you were going to join the core and teach for 2 years. So that was my job as the campus campaign coordinator. I was in charge of trying to find people to apply to Teach for America and who are willing to commit to this 2-year commitment. At the time, I thought it was the best pivot, just given how I still wanted to teach. But looking back, that was not my only option. However, this just goes to show the lack of investment that there is in education from a systemic level in higher education. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, like, had I had a mentor that could have guided me down another path that wasn't TFA, I could have been in a completely different situation. It would have changed my holistic, like, career trajectory. And I'm going to get into, like, what does a mentor kind of have to do with it, like, right now. But I will circle back later to kind of talk about, like, what are some other avenues that or ways that we probably should be investing in the education system so that people don't end up in my situation. So basically, to be a teacher of record in most states, you have various options. The option that could have changed my trajectory for DC specifically is option 4 within the Office of the State Superintendent of Education, which is short for or long for OSSE, OSSE. And they are the entity that is responsible for teacher licensure in the district. So basically, you go to them to get your teacher license, your teaching credential, and make sure so that, and then that allows you to be a teacher in the school. So option 4 permits anyone who is currently hired as a teacher at a school to be a teacher, to obtain a full licensure with the following requirements. So they have to achieve an effective rating on their performance evaluation for a minimum of 2 school years. And just to get into that really quickly, an effective rating is very broad.
It's subjective.
It's extremely subjective. And they say that, but there's not one uniform body that defines what effective it looks like and what it is. And so the school that I first worked at, they can define effective as one way, and then the school across the street can define it in a completely different manner, two completely different expectations, which is why it's kind of terrible how licensure works in D.C., or not even just D.C., to be real, in a lot of states, because there isn't one uniform system that makes sure that everybody kind of goes down a set of checks and balances. And not to say that there only needs to be one way. That's not what I'm advocating for at all. But what I am saying is that there should be some type of uniformity so that we're all on the same page, as opposed to anyone at any drop of a dime can just go become a teacher when they feel like it.
Mm-hmm. And I would also say that at the very least, if y'all gonna be subjective, make sure it's rooted in the culture of your school and your mission. Because people just be subjective off of their own opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that is so true. And so in addition to those requirements, the effectiveness, like I said, you currently working at a school, you also have to pass a background check. And then you have to pass all exams required for the subject area that you're gonna be teaching in. So all things that are practical, but let me be crystal clear. I did not note or state that you have to have a college degree. I did not note or state that you have had to have any type of experience or exposure to the profession prior to this. These are just, if you happen to work in a school, you can happen to become a teacher by this, with this option. And so I think that that is interesting to me, and there are three other options that are prior to this that have to kind of more so deal with you going through a formal teacher education program and things of that nature, but option four does not. So I've, like I said, I find this loophole in called Teach for America, and I'm sipping the Kool-Aid, y'all, I'm not gonna lie, and at the time, I'm working for them, trying to get people into the core, and also trying to pursue dreams of being an educator, and I'm not gonna lie, I'm also killing it, like, I am...
You always kill shit.
Yeah, that's... Honestly. Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy, but at the same time, it wasn't. Like, so for instance, I was responsible for recruiting the most diverse applicants into the core from, like, all the Mid-Atlantic higher education schools in the region, so... I do look back and feel a teeny, eeny bit better about doing what I did because I was recruiting black folks to teach in communities that were supporting black students. So that was like the one thing that I did walk away, because I know that I had to write a lot of papers about that, and I was extremely passionate about trying to get students who, trying to get educators who look like their students into classrooms. So fast forward, I get into TFA. Graduate from American University. I'm excited about this thing called Institute. And what is Institute, you may ask, right? So Institute basically is a space in which, prior to you starting your first year as a teacher at TFA, you go to this kind of like a summer camp for teachers. And at the summer camp, you are exposed to students. Typically, it's not like a full 30 student caseload. Is typically like probably 10 to 15. I had around 5 to 10 students that I was responsible for, and you teach a certain subject. And the kind of the grade band start off at kindergarten and work their way all the way up to like 11th grade, I'd say. And it's kind of like a summer school enrichment opportunity for those students. So just to kind of get everybody on the same page about like what Institute is.
You can tell I have a question.
Yes. I was like,
so I am also learning, yes, y'all, because you know, if you are a listener that has listened before, or if you're new, me and Jahad had different routes into the education system. So mine was more traditional, and so I'm just learning. So with Institute, and I don't want to jump the gun too much.
No, please.
Because you eventually get placed somewhere. Is Institute in the place that you live, and then you get placed somewhere?
Good question. So when you get into Teach for America, how it works is, or excuse me, when you apply to Teach for America, you have to rank where you want to be placed.
Okay.
And yeah, so that then will determine where you do your institute. So there aren't institutes in every single state. So like there's a Philly Institute. And so with Philly Institute, New York coming to Philly Institute, New Jersey TFA folks coming to Institute, DC, of course, and there's a couple other entities. I think Philadelphia, well, of course, Philadelphia, but I think there's like, I want to say Connecticut. There's a couple other regions that then will come to the Philly Institute, and we all would be teaching together.
Okay. There we go.
Yeah. Ready. Good question. And I actually have like a little side note a little later to talk about that anyway. So that's perfect that you asked that question. So we get to Institute and, well, actually, no, take a step back. So prior to you going to Institute, you have like a little weekend retreat in DC, which really was, it boils down to like it being like an interview day. So for about 5 hours the day before you leave for Institute, you interview with local school leaders that are seeking to hire TFA core members so that you can have your placement for the start of the year. Yeah, so like, what does this interview process look like? It was not a real interview, y'all. Like, I shouldn't say it wasn't a real interview. It was just like very scaffolded, extremely down. It's like you sitting in front of two other school leaders and like basically like speed dating, but an interview style, which was kind of weird because I don't think I had ever done it at that point. So I was interviewing for a teaching role between 5 to 7 interviews with probably like 14 to 20 different school leaders. And out of all those interviews, I would say 2 interviews stood out the most to me, both of which I eventually would learn that I received offers for. And I would later work for and meet the amazing black woman that I get to call my co-host, best friend, and woman of oh so many talents.
Hello.
The Lindsay Black.
Hello, hello, hello.
And so, like, that is something that I can look back and say that I appreciated the school that I worked at for the people that I worked with. And that is something that just continued to lift me up in times of sorrow, in times of despair, and in times of significant uncertainty. Mm-hmm. So, and let me be crystal clear, all of those words were extremely intentional. Oh, by the way, the school that I got hired at is Ingenuity Prep, but we'll get to that a little later, kind of, sort of. So, when interviewing for a school with TFA, you were told that you had to, not just, this is like strong language, you had to accept the first offer that you received. And so, looking back at that, it was something that I should not have listened to. And honestly, I think of TFA like a sports agent and us core members as the talent. And so each school has a partnership with TFA, and then that school pays TFA for a partnership. And so TFA only makes money if the schools fill their required teaching roles. This is why they forced us to take the first shiny or dusty offer letter that you would receive. Does that make sense?
Well, yes, but it doesn't. Like, yeah, it makes sense, but...
Right. And so TFA, of course, was putting themselves first. They value trying to fill a role over trying to allow you as a candidate to really fill out if the role fits you. And as a talent acquisition professional in the present day, I can tell you that it is a terrible practice and a terrible way to go about a job prospect process, because you should be able to really understand if this is an organization that you can see investing in you, if this is an organization that you can see yourself growing with. Like, those are questions that you should be able to answer, as opposed to just receiving an offer letter and having to jump on the first thing that you receive. Another episode, though. We ain't gonna get into all that. So, I went to Philly for about a month and taught high school English with my amazing co-teacher, Ms. Swap. She was so dope. She's actually still in New York teaching currently. And it was a pretty open and shut situation while at Institute. Nothing really traumatic happened to me. There were a lot of people who dropped out of the core once they got to Institute.
Because and, y'all niggas don't want to be teachers. Yeah. Duh.
And there was a bunch of reasons, like from people.
You didn't get into law school, so then you decided I'm going to fall back on the motherfucking kids of the nation.
That part. So there was a bunch of reasons, from people failing the practices to like people not actually really wanting to be up at 6 a.m. and be at school from 6 a.m. till 3 o'clock. And mind you, we were working like half days, for real, for real. So it wasn't even like that bad, but it was a good experience for me. But I had already been kind of exposed to the classroom, so it wasn't like any type of culture shock or anything that I didn't know that I could get through. Side note, really quick, then this was something I was going to mention earlier. So, do y'all realize that was originally placed in Miami? Which is
welcome
crazy.
To Miami, bienvenido.
And then I just really be wondering, like, where would I be?
You, what, on the beach? I can tell you that.
But you know why
with a pina colada.
Tried to change it?
Why?
Because I looked at that pay.
Oh.
They make under 50. And I was like, oh, hell no. Baby. This is not going to work for me.
Come on to D.C., baby.
This is not going to work for me. But who knows? I just sometimes I do look back and I wonder, I'm like, damn, like what would have happened had I moved to Miami? but we're here.
So yeah, doesn't really you're matter. Fine where you're at.
So I eventually received an offer from Ingenuity Prep, accepted and told them I need to be absent for a day during the first week of work because my grandfather was turning 75. And if y'all don't know, but I'm Belizean. And my grandparents live in Belize. And so his 75th birthday party was going to be in Belize. This was like a pre-planned trip prior to me even graduating from undergrad. All that's to say, these mugs hit me up and asked me if I would be willing to change my ticket from the day in which I was supposed to be leaving to an earlier date because I would be absent for a day of the professional development.
And you should have asked them if they're willing to kiss your ass. That's what you should ask them back. Real professional. In an email.
Wait. I would eventually tell them no. That
or like, that. I... Whatever.
And then, but look, in the moment, I didn't realize. In the moment, it felt like, oh, wow. Like, they're so nice. Like, they're trying to get me back even sooner. They're willing to pay. Yada, yada, yada. But you'll later find out that.
That was a lie. Okay.
That part. Mari. So at the time, the guilt was already real because I kind of had felt like I should have been making that adjustment to my schedule. However, like I said, I did end up saying no. And due to travel delays, I actually would end up missing not only one, but like two or three of the first couple of PD days. And honestly, it was one of the best decisions that I have made in my life because I knew if I knew then what I know now, woo!
Right.
I would have played it out completely
differently. Because you didn't miss nothing. Because I was there.
Yes, you were. Yes, you were.
I was there.
Yes, you were.
Didn't miss nothing. I don't remember anything.
Yes, you were. And so this is the best part of the story. It's like, what did you teach your first year? And this is me getting into that teaching aspect. And this is one of the most important portions of the story. So the first year, I taught this curriculum called Foundations, which basically is like a literacy phonemic awareness curriculum, which helps students learn the fundamentals of reading. So like the very basics, letter sounds, word segmentation, reading sentences, writing sentences. Like that's really what I was teaching them how to do. Exposed to like a three-station teaching model. I know Linz remembers this. It was three teachers teaching at one time and students will rotate in the classroom. Utter chaos because the rooms were so small. And we had no windows, among so many other things.
And it could have went well. And it's also really frustrating because, you know, that's how they were marketing it to parents.
It is.
That there's more teachers. But the way that you got to do it and as strict as you have to be to get them to transition. And then I'm in the classroom with white women, so mm-hmm. they think I'm too loud. And I'm mm-hmm. just like, they can't hear me, though.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, keep going. I don't want to hide your kids. No,
but you're right. Like, those are experiences. And so it's just like, what battle do I want to fight today? And that, like, constantly being... And in addition to the fact that, like, that was our first year. And I think that, like, that's already a lot to be in a new space, especially with folks who've already been there and then are white. And so, like... But at the end of the day, like, you being a black person and knowing, like, I'm going to do what's best for my kids because these kids, at the end of the day, they fuck with me more than they do.
Right,
like,
girl. Just girl, bye.
Off top. But I think that that also was something that I just quickly came to realize. But I have to say, like, it was a very challenging year in the sense of student behaviors.
I thought that,
and mind you, this is only year one. And year one, I'm still in TFA at this point. In addition to me working this job, I'm also a full-time student at Hopkins at the time. And then I'm also going to Teach for America kind of development opportunities. And then I'm also working like two other part-time jobs as well. Just because I think that looking back, I wanted more money. More than what I was making in that point in time because I wanted to... I love shopping. I love to spend. And... It was, honestly, I also realized that those jobs were a lot easier than teaching. And seeing that juxtaposed against what I was doing, I was like, well, damn, like, why is this the case? Like, why am I so damn straight? Why am I going to sleep thinking about all of the things, all the tasks, this long laundry list of tasks that I have to do tomorrow? And I don't really have a second to even think about myself. To the point to where, like, holidays, given that y'all know I'm from California... Like, holidays, I'm not going home for Thanksgiving. It started to become to the point to where I wasn't going home for Christmas. Like, just different things that I was not doing because I didn't want to have to deal with traveling from one coast to another coast because of the time and the energy that I was going to take. Mm. And I knew I didn't have it. So after all of these realizations and awakenings are happening, I'm also going through the what I would quickly learn to be my first tumultuous year of teaching. And we have a performance evaluation process. And on this performance evaluation process, there's rankings of highly effective, effective, developing, and minimally effective. I think I got all of those. I feel like it was just four, right, Lindsay? I don't think that there was anything else.
Oh, I never paid attention to failing or developing.
So. Gotcha.
So I wouldn't know.
That part. And so, basically, my first year, I was deemed a developing teacher. And I was honestly shook because it was one step away from failing. So that was the first thing that I was like, wait a minute. Like, I'm confused. Like, how do we get here? But B, I just was also trying to figure out, like, what did my team, as far as like my supervisor, what were you not doing to get me to a better space? Like, it should never be the case that I am a developing teacher. If I'm doing all of the right things and my students are growing, but you're saying that I'm developing in the sense that I'm one step away from failing. But, you know, I'm learning the system at this point, so I'm like, okay, I'm going to take my L, and this doesn't feel good. And the reason why I call it an L is because the way that evaluations work is highly effective came with a bonus of $7,500. Effective at the time came up with a bonus of $5,000. And then you also would move up a certain amount of steps on a step ladder for your salary. So post-evaluation, I was extremely unmotivated because of this process. It felt ingenuine. It felt subjective. It felt extremely misleading. In addition to that, a lot of my coworkers had received highly effective. And I was sitting there shook because I'm like, wait, like, how did you get it? And I later would find out that...
Who are you talking about? Who are you referring to? Give me a clue. Because I got my glass of tea right now.
Oh, you really don't know.
Yeah, boy.
I don't remember, but I just remember... After year three, people were telling me their salaries, and I was like, well, that means that you went up two times, and that means that one of those times had to have been when we all were first year teachers.
They also knew to negotiate the first contract.
That's true, too.
I do remember, I think it was Priya who was telling me once about how she negotiated the first contract, and I'm just like, I didn't even know you could do that.
I did not know that.
I had no idea.
I did not
know
that.
But it's like, it was definitely layered.
Same. Yeah, I didn't know until, and I think that I really struggled with that. Once I started hearing like, well, how much people were making, I was like, well, damn, I am boo boo the motherfucking fool.
Okay, yeah. Bamboozle, all of that.
And then like, just like you said earlier, like just being a black person in that school setting, all the parents coming to you, all the kids coming to you. Like, you are just expected to do so much.
It's the invisible tax that we referred to in the last episode.
And we probably have talked about this fight, but I will never forget that fight that happened, or almost happened, my first year of teaching.
With Wish McCauley Mama and Lindsay and I.
Yes! We're literally breaking up a physical altercation between a parent and a staff member of the school building. And the CFO at the time, he's standing in the hallway looking at us as if we're... Just like we're, I don't know if it was like a we're saving the day, but all I knew is that he was not helping.
No.
And he was sitting there looking as if he did not, like, as if he was not a senior leader of the school. And I'm confused as to how me and my best friend, we're both first year teachers, how we're doing more to defuse the situation than this person who makes times three or four of us. Like, that makes no sense to me. And I think it really speaks to the way that schools are being ran, that like you are that out of touch to where you don't feel like you need to interject into a situation
of violence at the school.
That makes no sense to me.
Like, it is so wild. People should have got the day off the next day. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
And the other issue is that these schools enable the parents so much because, again, they're a business. And for those that don't know, you get paid per pupil at a public charter school. So you do, if kids aren't re-enrolling for the next year, then the recruiting team has to do so much more work to actually get all the seats filled. So I feel like parents are bribed and super enabled. Like, ain't no motherfucking way that a parent thinks it's okay. First of all, y'all, there was no elevator.
You have to walk up steps, like, three flights of steps. Is she not... I love all of... I'm very body positive. But she was a bigger woman.
She was, yes.
And I'm saying that because everybody complained about those steps. Mm-hmm. But she walked up those steps midday. How'd she get past front desk? Mm-hmm. How'd she walk all the way down the hallway? She walked all the way down the hallway to try and fight the behavior support woman who actually loves her son.
Loves. Through it all.
Did everything for her son. And she has the nerve to come down there and fight? Girl, if you don't go beat up yourself, because your son is wilding out.
He was. And that was something that was consistent, too. And honestly, looking back, I really do wish I had the resources that I have present day. Because... transparently, that child should not have been at that school.
No, he should
have been replaced into another school. Which is why it's even more frustrating. Because if you're a school leader, these are things that you should know. You should not be running a school and putting staff members in harm's way because of your deficits. Because you're not doing your due diligence when it comes to making sure that special education is a priority. That's never something that should be put on the back burner. And that's what consistently happened at that school, which you will later find out so much more. But at the end of the day, I just think that it was unfortunate for me to be someone who was lauded as this asset to the organization. I agree that there's always room for improvement. But to this evaluation system specifically, I feel like it's extremely subjective. And so there was nothing objective that I could take away from those learning experiences. Because we would actually learn that the following year we would scrap that whole evaluation system and build something else up, because we found out that it actually was not inclusive of all staff members. Go figure. And additionally...
I'm mad because I didn't know they scrapped that evaluation system.
Well, not the whole thing, but they took out different strands, which also just...
Right, they probably took out strands that they purposely lowered for me so that I couldn't work there again.
Well, you're jumping the gun.
I'm jumping the gun.
Gosh.
That's a little taste, okay? That's a little taste.
No, but like regardless, although the paycheck is what like kept the bills paid, it wasn't the reason why I wanted to teach. My purpose in teaching was to be someone that students saw themselves in. I wasn't fortunate enough to have a black male educator, and I know that this is something I've harped on throughout multiple episodes, but until I got to American, that was the first time that I saw a black male teacher. And I wanted to change that, as well as being an educator that was community focused and just not cut up with tradition, because I remember time and time again, my high school teacher specifically, just going through the motion of teaching, and that did not feel good. It didn't speak to who I was as a student, and being the type of leader that I was in high school, those teachers should have been challenged in other ways than test scores and things that just did not speak to who I was as a student. So I wanted black students to know that there is a world that exists for them, and they didn't need to hide their true selves regardless of what textbooks and things were saying about them and about us and our culture. And so I just really wanted to be a black being who was really just trying to be present for them. And that's the reason why I chose to teach. And y'all gonna hear a little bit more about the saga that continues.
Yeah, in our this next was episode. Light. This was light and informative. Very helpful to set the scene. But we're gonna get into it, yeah.
Yes. And now it's time for our call to action. We're crowdfunding to raise just $4,000 to cover expenses to produce high-quality podcasts, to enhance our social media marketing, as well as our presence.
And y'all, we want to put on another live show in order to uplift the voices of our educators. The link to donate, it's our Indiegogo crowdfunding link, will be located in the description. And if you follow us on our social media pages, you will also find it in the bios.
Peace, love, and light, y'all.
Hootie hoo!